Kim Sabison and Julia Moskin were not just co-workers at the New York Times dining section for years. They were also great friends, despite coming from very different backgrounds. Julia has lived her whole life in New York City writing about food, whereas Kim has lived in Alaska and San Francisco writing about crime, education, and other topics, and cooking. When an article where they would each cook a small dinner party on a tight budget was suggested, they both jumped at the idea and turned it into a contest, and that was followed by 11 more cooking competitions over the next year. Now they have published a book called Cook Fight, with the recipes and stories from their contests published by Echo. And I'm very pleased that it brings Kim Sabison and Julia Moskin to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Now, in the introduction, you describe yourselves as work wives. What does that mean?
Absolutely. Well, you know, you really do need to have somebody at work who has your back all the time. And Julia and I sat next to each other in the dining section and immediately realized that we would be each other's work. Well, maybe not immediately. We had a few tiffs in the beginning, like all spouses in relationships do. But, you know, it's the one where you get off the phone after you've sort of like had a fight with your real spouse or your, you know, your bosses, your editors being a complete idiot. Not that my editors at the New York Times were ever complete idiots, but,
just,
you know.
Incomplete idiots.
Well, there you go. But there is one who has your back. And so we developed this friendship. And then it also came from our love of cooking, which is really where our beloved friendly competition comes from.
So this was a friendly competition?
Well,
be nice now.
I thought it was a friendly competition. I really had not done a lot of cooking competition, or really competition of any kind since the fifth grade spelling bee. And Kim comes from a long line of Olympic skiers, and she played sports, and I did not. And so I took a very relaxed attitude toward the notion of competition, and, you know, until it got to the point where every few hours Kim would stick her head up over the cubicle and be like, well, what are you making for dessert? Well, what are you going to serve it on? And finally, she accused me of being a mud hen, which I didn't even know what that meant, which apparently is a bird that lies down in the mud and refuses to fight. And then I was irritated. And then we got into it.
And Frank Bruni, the former restaurant critic and food writer at the Times, now writes op-ed pieces, was the judge. What were his criteria?
Well, see, he sat between us, and so we would constantly be. But you know, it's like having a good friend, and we're just like, what are you gonna make for dinner? What are you gonna do? So he kept hearing this, and finally he said, "Why don't you two see?" And this was right when the recession was starting, and we thought, you know, we're not gonna like tell people 100 ways to make ground beef. But he said, "Why don't you do a dinner party for six for under $50, and I'll come and eat at both your homes and judge them." And, you know, when you have Frank Bruni coming over for dinner, it'll make you a little nervous.
It's a little stressful.
Yeah. So in pantry items and wine and alcohol didn't count. But we immediately
got to work. Did he bring the wine
at
least?
No, actually, you know, Eric Asimov donated the wine because he sat on the other side of us and, of course, has the constant amazing stash. So
he's the wine critic.
He helped us
lubricate the process.
Yes, who also has a great book out now. Mm-hmm. Plug for my work husband, Eric.
Well, I in my experience, because I've been asked to judge some contests, what happens is if you're friends with both people, you tend to declare everyone a tie.
Which is how Frank collapsed like a cheap tent on this competition.
A lot of people feel that he just dropped that ball.
He liked me best, he told me secretly.
So all 12 contests turned out to be ties?
Well, the question is, what are you judging it on? And, you know, that is really how we ended up putting the competitions together, because it's not just, you know, I mean, we're not chefs, and it's not just like whose food is better or whose chicken dish is better. What we really decided and what we write in the introduction to each chapter, each challenge has a theme. There was the one $50 budget dinner mm-hmm. party, but then we just decided to exploit the fact that we just think differently just about menus. Not that, like, you know, one of us is right really or one of us is wrong, but just when the idea of like, okay, now I have to have a tea party at 4 o'clock for my child's birthday, but all these grown-ups are coming. Or, okay, I have to introduce my new girlfriend to my old boyfriend's parents, or, you know, just various occasions, and also having to do with food, like having the farmer's market,
and
picnics.
I think our big difference sort of shows in the comfort challenge. We decided if someone shows up on your doorstep who lost, brokenhearted, a death in the family, how do you comfort somebody with food? And You know, I'm a little more of a, you know, if you could see us now, you see Julia's very svelte in her lovely New York look, and I'm a little, you know, more robust. And you would think that I would be going for the, you know, heavy chocolate and the macaroni and cheese. And in fact, we took very different approaches to the comfort challenge.
Yours was homemade sesame crackers with spicy nori goat spread, cheese spread. You also highlight Vietnamese pho as,
yeah,
as one of your personal comfort foods. Why? What makes pho?
Well, I was going clean and light and restorative. And, you know, pho for people who eat this big, you know, sort of beef broth and noodles. And there's always a plate of, like, vegetables and basil leaves. And so it gives somebody something to do with their hands while they're talking to you. And you sort of put all these things in your soup. And it's restorative. And I just wanted the sort of the gentle restorative approach to comforting somebody.
Of course, the cliche is mac and cheese. Neither of you did that. Julia.
I fear that possibly I did.
Didn't you do beef bourguignon with chive mashed potatoes?
That was one of them. But there's also a mac and cheese recipe that is in there. That,
crusty macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, that's a very popular recipe. So, I didn't feel I could leave it out.
So how is beef bourguignon a comfort food?
Oh, it's so easy to eat. I mean, I think that that's part of it. And it's just so savory. And, you know, it builds that particular beef bourguignon. It's very easy to make, which is another part of it. I mean, obviously, either for cooking for yourself, you know, for your own comfort, you don't want to be peeling pearl onions, for heaven's sake. I mean, so that's a very easy one. It's just chopped shallots and chopped bacon. It's very different from the classic Julia Child, which, you know, many people have been defeated by over the years, even though it's considered one of her easier recipes.
Now, do you think that this affected your cooking skills? Or did it affect your friendship?
You mean having someone to cook against?
Yeah, well, because then you have to start thinking about it. It's very different than just saying, we have some friends coming over. What do you think that they would like?
Absolutely. I think people have had friends that they do competing dinner parties with. Oh, come over for dinner Saturday. And you sort of throw it off as it's a casual thing. But you know, at the last dinner party at their house, they did this like amazing feat of, you know, use their new anti-griddle or whatever they did. And so you're like, oh, how can I make? And, you know, it's all going to be casual and gracious. But, you know, when you have somebody to cook against who you adore, and I do adore Julia, it makes you a better cook. I think being in the kitchen with someone or having someone you can call on the phone and bounce an idea off of, it does make you a better cook. And that's kind of the joy. You know, we didn't intend this to be another competition like a Top Chef chopped finger or whatever competition it is. It really is that thing where you have, like, you know, we had old grandmothers or aunties in the kitchen who would try to top each other with the better brisket.
And also just, you know, there's just a transfer of information and knowledge about food, which is just kind of rare these days, you know.
But you did call them a cook fight.
Well, that's true. That's true. Caught us on that one, Mr. Lopate.
Cook fight, two cooks, 12 challenges, 125 recipes, including some that we have posted on our show page at WNYC.org. Kathy Horan's bacon fat ginger snaps.
Oh, that recipe brought
also
me to my knees.
The white bean soup with chive oil. The book is published by Echo, and it has a foreword by Frank Bruni, who knows something about food. So did this affect your relationship at all, or was it just friendly for all 12 months?
Well, you know, there's a kind of intimacy, of course, that comes with trying to anticipate what someone else is going to cook in a given situation. And, you know, it's like, I know Kim by now. I knew some of her moves. I know that her mom is Italian. And so that's something that she's going to default to. I know that she's also more she's a little bit more into presentation and making things really pretty, which also continues to surprise me because I'm very practical and I tend to feel like, look, people feel it's a miracle when you present them with any kind of home-cooked food at all these days. And, you know, why bother? But Kim, again, you know, she really has that drive to compete, the drive to impress.
Do you think it's Julia, drive.
Do you think it's because of how you came to writing about food?
Because
your mother probably just plopped everything on the
plate. Right. And I do, I think cooking by hand is something that a lot of people have lost, that sort of ability. You know, if anybody sat down and tried to get a recipe from a relative or a parent who's a good cook, you sit with them and you can never recreate it because they cook by hand so much. And I think I grew up cooking by hand, watching my mother do that. And so I feel kind of confident to be able to try to take things to a little bit different level to make it look nice. And I think there's something wonderful when you sit down and the food looks lovely and the table looks lovely. And don't let Julia fool you, because she acts all like, oh, I'm not competitive. I didn't graduate from Harvard. No. I didn't. I'm not working at the New York Times. No, this all just happened to me. She's quite competitive.
Well, how did you get into food writing, Julia?
I started by answering an ad in the back of the newspaper, the New York Press, which was a giveaway paper. I think it's still going on. And you know, I had absolutely no qualifications as a journalist, which is another place where Kim and I differ, and one way in which I was pretty intimidated. When she came into the newsroom, she had been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. She had worked at the San Francisco Chronicle, which is, you know, the sort of this amazing food section with a beautiful test kitchen. And, you know, I had been hired based on some restaurant reviews that I had ended up writing for the New York Press, a job that I got by answering the question, tell us why you're the best person for this job. And it kind of went from there.
In your case, Kim, you had this varied career, but mostly writing about food these days.
Yeah, it's interesting. I started out as a, you know, kind of a post-Watergate baby. We all ran off to journalism school and we're going to change the world. And I ended up in Anchorage, Alaska, and they had a really bad food critic at the time. And I said, well, let me take over as the restaurant critic. And I always joke that being the restaurant critic in Anchorage is a little like being the best ballerina in Lubbock, Texas. But there I was, nonetheless. And I just got into it, and it was, you know, right when the obesity crisis was just starting and kind of pre-Michael Pollan years. And I started writing about food, and then I got a job at the San Francisco Chronicle writing about food news, really, and then moved over to the Times.
In the Children's Challenge, you explain that you're firmly in the camp that argues that children will eat real food, and your white bean soup with chive oil is an example of that. Is there something about the soup that appeals particularly to kids? Because conventional wisdom has it that kids do not want to eat anything that looks like a vegetable.
Well, you don't have to tell them it's a vegetable. I put it in little teacups for kids, like it's a tea party. That's one thing. And then they can squirt their own little green chive oil on it if they want, which is fun. So getting them involved. I think it's how they eat something. I also have a Caesar salad in a cup, which are long, kind of the leaves of romaine in a cup that they can pick up with their fingers and eat. And I think that the more you involve the kids in making something, the more they're going to eat real food. Now, Julia scoffs at this, of course.
Well, you also gave them a dessert, a lemon cheese layer cake.
All right. Kids will eat any cake. Sugar, they'll eat it.
And for Julia, you're back to the mac and cheese for the kids.
I have noticed
pancakes.
There's a lot of cheese.
I've never heard of mac and cheese pancakes. Did you invent that?
No, I wish I had. My God, no. They were invented by a crazy genius called Kenny Shopson, who has been running a restaurant in New York for a long time now in the Essex Market. And he is a famously irascible person. I got thrown out of his restaurant a few times, not for bad behavior, but just because if you tried to sit somewhere that he didn't want you to sit, you would have to go.
Now, he's been on our show. I threw him out of the studio because he refused to sit where I told him to.
Good for you.
So I can understand why that recipe would appeal to children. And then you have a devil dog cake.
Yeah, that's a great cake. I really love I don't have a huge sweet tooth. This is another place. Since Kim moved to the South, she's become like a caramel cake, you know, donut kind of person. And I this one is just kind of a compromise because it's that really dark devil's food cake with that Oreo sort of almost black burnt edge. I love that. And then it's a whipped cream frosting. Buttercream is very fashionable. The Magnolia Bakery and the pink and the blue. And I am actually not a fan of the buttercream. And I love that frosting. So
we have very little time, but I was thinking about the Thanksgiving dinner because we've just gone through that. Kim, you argue that Thanksgiving is all about the turkey. Julia, you say the sides are the best part.
You sound so shocked.
She's wrong.
No. Well, I think we like both.
Well, you do have to have both.
You both did make stuffing.
I am still an American, and I do eat a turkey. But, you know, the question is, where as a cook are you going to lavish your attention, and what are you really going to think about? And I have more of a, like, if you put the turkey in the oven, what is to prevent it from getting done kind of attitude.
But see, I think it is from the turkey that all good liquids of Thanksgiving flow, the stock
and the liquids
and the gravy. And, you know, Julia maintains that the turkey is nothing more than a 20-pound Yankee candle. But once again, Moskin is wrong.
Well, the real trick, of course, is to make the turkey taste good and be juicy. It doesn't matter whether you believe in turkeys or not, the big problem is making it into something that people are going to want to eat and won't turn into dust.
I have to say, though, that I feel like, you know, I feel a lot of love from the people, for my fiery sweet potatoes and for my green beans with ginger and garlic. I mean, the turkey, no matter how good it is, I think people don't really notice it. So maybe it's a pure vanity issue. But
you also have a cookie bake-off challenge. We're having a holiday cookie challenge on our show in December. What would you suggest I enter?
Oh, definitely the bacon fat ginger snaps.
This is where I can't compete, and I fall to my knees in front of Miss Moskin for her bacon ginger snap cookies.
Bacon in a cookie.
It's unbelievable.
They
do that. You're going to win.
Taste
you're
like
win.
Bacon. I should stipulate that they just have this kind of like smoky, salty edge underneath that goes with the spice that is quite extraordinary.
Julia Moskin and Kim Siversen will be speaking with Abigail Pogrebin at JCC Manhattan. That's at Amsterdam and 76th Street tonight at 7:30. For more information and where to buy tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Their book, Cook Fight, Two Cooks, 12 Challenges, 125 Recipes, An Epic Battle for Kitchen Dominance. It is published by Echo. And I thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having
us.
Such
a pleasure.